Mini episode 167 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs consulting and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at PullinsGroup.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, we are here again here today at Alley NYC, being hosted by the nice folks over there at the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris hosting a tremendous panel here. We've got a couple of our favorites here all in one place. We have done segments previously on the phone with Simon Applebaum and Lloyd Carroll. We're here with both of them today as an additional bonus. Good friend Adam Buckman with us as well. Four FDH Lounge dignitaries, and I would say dignitaries with a capital D. In this sense here, it's tremendous to be in the presence of all of them talking TV. So, guys, good to be here with all of you today.
Good to be here with you, Rick, Simon, Adam, and I understand there are a lot of nervous television executives at this very moment. They're all in the same room.
You can feel it outside on the New York streets.
And, Rick, at long last, we can see each other as well as hear each other.
Yeah,
yes,
way to come to New York. Way to leave Cleveland, Rick. Yeah. How's that feel, to leave Cleveland for the first time in your life?
Actually, for the first time in these parts, it would be an exaggeration to say leaving Cleveland for the first time, period. But very interesting to be here in NYC, making the rounds here with Steve Cervillo as my blocking back, as it were, going to the different places. And getting this set up here with you guys today, we had some interesting things being bannered about off air, and I guess we'll just kind of see where it goes. We're going to be talking about essentially the state of TV as we're sitting here a little bit past the halfway point of 2012. But if you're looking at it in terms of the traditional fall season, we're in between them. We had the one, obviously, that wrapped up in May, the other one about to begin next month. So we're still sort of about the halfway point of the year, even though it's August. We got the Olympics going on. CBS News, I heard bantered about as a topic for conversation. So since we're in the midst of the Olympics right now, I guess we can kind of just start there. Thoughts on the coverage? NBC, of course, has been in a situation where they've been blasted for not having enough of the events online, the opening ceremonies, as it were. Adam, I don't know if this will be a conflict of interest here with this being an Xfinity thing here, but I guess we'll start with you. Anything that you're – I am joking, of course. Yes. I know you could say whatever, but what are your thoughts on the coverage as you've seen it?
Well, as it happens, I'm not going to sit here and criticize NBC too much for the coverage, and not because of my association with the parent company, Comcast, but it's really because I guess I've been around covering television long enough to have been through these Olympic cycles, as I know Simon has been too. And frankly, it's the same complaints. It's the same complaints, haven't we heard, since the 1980s, where, you know, there's not enough of this, and there's not enough of that, and there's not enough live coverage, and yet thousands and thousands of hours, I think it's thousands of hours, are being produced over all the, you know, the NBC platforms online and all the networks they own. And frankly, no human being can watch all of that coverage anyway. So it comes down to me personally. I watch a few hours of it every evening. And frankly, I don't have time during the day to find out who won the races anyway in advance. And so for me, these things are new, even if they're not live. And so I've been enjoying it very much.
I have to say, too, I don't know if anybody else has been catching any of it. I have been enjoying it. On this trip, I've been having to do it mostly online, watching team handball. What a great game that is. It's, as far as I'm concerned, a minor editorial comment on my part. A shame that the USA doesn't have a team there, maybe Rio in 2016. But, Simon, what have been your thoughts on the coverage of the games? I know it's something that you've been focused on with Tomorrow Will Be Televised and all the different platforms that Comcast is bringing to bear for this thing.
I'll tell you, Rick, the physical coverage itself, I'm talking about the coverage on the screen, I give it an A. I think if you have a high-definition set, the scenes of London, the scenes of the various events, Bob Costas' work, the work of the various commentators, terrific. Tom Hammond does a great job in track and field. Dan Hicks with Rowdy Gaines on swimming. The physical coverage has been terrific. it's the marketing, the promotion, and actually just watching the games that is the story for me. And there's two sides to it. Number one, I think that NBC has done in some ways a better job of marketing promoting the games that they have done in a very long time. Because Mark Lazarus, the fairly new head of NBC Sports, did two things that I think were important. Number one, rather than bury the U.S. Olympic trials on CNBC or MSNBC in a weekend time period with no publicity whatsoever anywhere, he put the Olympic trials on in prime time on NBC. And while the ratings were okay, I think that was big in terms of drumming up interest for the games. Secondly, in the pre-Mark Lazarus era under Dick Ebersole, who did a lot of great things, a lot of crazy things, NBC has been more press-friendly than they have been in a long time. They would not hold a press conference at 30 Rock a month before the games. They would not do a conference call with the press. They would not do conference calls before the games, during the games, whatever. And so far, NBC did do an event, which was, I understand, where we were attended. I was on the conference call right after here in New York. Then about the day or two before the opening ceremonies, Lazarus and some other people were on a call, and they have done also another call a week into the games. And while the jury is still out on how well the games have done, and there are some suggestions that the second week fatigue is showing up and the track and field is not doing as well as swimming and gymnastics, the bottom line is that NBC has done some good things to up the coverage. There's still an issue about who is watching the games. It's very clear that the major markets basically are not. New York, Boston, Dallas, Miami, Houston, San Francisco, L.A., they are not watching the games. It is the secondary markets, or it's a market where an athlete like Gabby Johnson in Washington, D.C., or Missy Franklin in Denver, when they're on, the game coverage is high. And Telemundo is still not running the games in prime time, the Spanish language network. That is one of the missed opportunities of the games. And frankly, somebody at NBC Sports and Telemundo has got to come clean about why, for the umpteenth time, Telemundo, which would do very well with prime time, is not running the games in prime time, and why you have to, for the big events, if you want to watch them in Spanish, you got to wait till midnight.
That is kind of a strange decision on their part. The Olympic trials, that was a very good point that you made there, almost kind of an investment in the Olympic game ratings themselves, even if they work, you know, a little bit soft at the moment there. But Lloyd, I know that on your recent press junket to San Diego, it may not have allowed for much viewing here.
Well,
but
actually, it's interesting you should say that because I think nobody's talked about this time zone issues.
Okay,
I mean, don't forget, I was 3 hours back in Pacific time, so when the games were in London, it was an 8-hour difference, and yet I was able to appreciate that for some reason the hotel I was at, that's the Hyatt La Jolla, by the way, terrific place. I was watching MSNBC, they had in the concierge level, and I never thought I'd be this involved watching China versus Germany and table tennis, ping pong. I wonder who won those matches. but also I was watching other sports like volleyball, and what's interesting is it wasn't just USA versus. I found it compelling just to watch two countries which I had no real vested interest, unlike my North Korean women, who I was, of course, cheering on.
But here's something else, Lloyd. This is according to NBC's own research. Guess which time zone is drawing the most viewers?
I would imagine the East.
No, West Coast. East
really?
Coast the lowest. East Coast the lowest in terms of share of audience.
That's a surprise.
What's the explanation for that?
NBC hasn't given one yet to
Maybe
this point.
Maybe it's lifestyles, California and outdoor athletics.
Part of it, I think, is that in the major markets like New York and Atlanta, you don't see a lot of marketing and promotion for the games. Where are bus posters? Where are subway signs? Where's outdoor ads? KNBC in Los Angeles, to their credit, did do a viewing party of the opening ceremonies. And once again, and it beats me why, the cable operators and DirecTV, et cetera, are not promoting the games whatsoever. You don't see local ads. You don't see promos on CNBC or MSNBC for the games, even on their national breaks. Where's a CNBC ad for boxing, which is on from 5 to 8 o'clock Eastern time, et cetera, you know, in the various time zones? You don't see it. And the cable operators, I think, maybe they still have Olympic triple cast, you know, hate for NBC. But I can't understand why even Comcast, NBC's parent, is not on their cable systems running promos when they could make a lot of money and a lot of ratings. And by the way, the daytime ratings for all the cable networks, NBC Sports, Bravo, CNBC, are up. But they're not up because of promotion by the part of the operators.
No, they're really not. And it's an interesting thing that you mentioned, Adam. There might be a tie-in there, you know, California, the Southwest, et cetera, because it had been mentioned by Simon that with Missy Franklin and with Gabby Douglas that you'd had a spike in ratings if a local athlete was involved. I wonder, to your point there, if there's not a disproportionate amount of some of the athletes coming from that area.
Well, I have no evidence to back that up. But what interests me about the Olympics is that it has so many sports that most of us don't think about at all on any kind of regular or semi-regular basis in our lives. And suddenly we become interested in you know, two-person beach volleyball teams and various track and field events, and as you mentioned, team handball, which is a sport you probably never thought about till you caught it the other day.
And how about field hockey and water polo? I just came over here from a game. It was a quarterfinal game of Spain and Montenegro. That's a wonderful story. Here is a country, Montenegro, that nobody knows about, that just beat one of the – actually, it was a gold medal winner in 2004 in water polo, and they're going to face the winner of U.S.-Croatia. I mean, some of these team sports events, which are running on either MSNBC or NBC Sports, are just fascinating. The coverage is wonderful, very even-handed, which leads to another point. It seems to be a so goes the U.S., so goes the ratings.
Yeah.
The ratings were high, higher than Beijing 4 years ago, because the swimming team, the U.S. swimmers, did incredible. They dominated the sport. The gymnastic people dominated the sport. And because gymnastics played out for a week and a half rather than a week, the ratings when gymnastics have been on have been terrific. The track and field people have not dominated, and it goes back to the fact that maybe NBC should go back to the ABC way of doing things, where it was the up-close and personal of the athletes all around the world, no matter where they came from. I mean, look at the 60s and 70s. Kip Kano, the South African track and field, or the Kenyan track and field runner, or Olga Corbett, or Nadia Comaneci. ABC, because of their approach, because of the late and great Rune Arledge, made them into superstars. And you want to watch the Olympics not only for the U.S. athletes, bless their soul, but also for the athletes around the world.
That's really true. And if that is a legitimate criticism of the America-centric coverage that NBC provides, it is too bad. And I agree. You grew up with Olympics where you really felt it was a worldwide event when you watched it on ABC, and not these days.
And one other thing, Adam, guess who is really the comeback story of the Olympics? Great Britain. Great Britain, before the first weekend, was like, where were they? And now they are third place in the overall medal count. They're eight behind the United States in the gold medal count. It's really another great story that I think is being short-sighted.
Well, of course, my favorite sport, equestrian sports.
Yes, of course.
I understand that Ann Romney's horse placed a distant 28th. I hope that's not an incumbent of what we might be seeing in the fall. Why, if you're running for president, would you possibly enter a horse, subjecting yourself to ridicule? And I think some of these Democratic PACs have actually been running ads about this. Why would you do that? I mean, just like if you want to run for president, you don't have offshore bank accounts. Yeah. Hello? Well, anyway, we'll have to save that one for like late October when we do this again.
I think so.
Yes, but dressage enthusiasts will all vote for him.
And by the
Adam, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume he had those votes in the bag anyway.
Simon's got some electoral thoughts.
One more thing about why this Telemundo situation is very important. Because 4 years from now, the Summer Olympics will be in Rio de Janeiro.
Mm-hmm.
Rio de Janeiro is only an hour ahead of the East Coast. So it's a good probability that a lot of the events will be live. After 2014, Telemundo, which is the Spanish language network that's owned by Universal, NBC Universal, will get the World Cup. If the Olympic Committee decides we're going to put the soccer in prime time, where the East Coast can get it, with teams like Brazil, the United States, Argentina, I would think that Telemundo and soccer fans who want to catch the game in Spanish live are going to scream bloody murder if Telemundo does not run those games in prime time. Mm-hmm. So somebody, whether it's the IOC or NBC stations or Mark Lazarus or Emilio Romano, the new head of Telemundo, doesn't come clean now, get straight, and say, here's what's going on, let's do something about it. I think there could be a big problem with Telemundo and Rio.
Well, I don't think there'll be a problem with soccer. I think they're aware that, look, tomorrow's big game, the women's game, U.S. a rematch of the Women's World Cup, U.S. versus Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I won't tell you who I'll be rooting for, but I will be in Benihana. let me ask you, is there any more pressure on an athlete than there is probably on Hope Solo and perhaps Alex Morgan, the two hotties who, one thing about this country, you know, unless you're Lolo Jones, we don't care if you win or lose. The Anna Kournikova of track and field.
Right.
But when it comes to this, we don't second place, a silver medal, you might as well be a tin medal for all we care.
True.
I guarantee you their IMG agents, they were thinking about committing suicide last year in Germany. Well, they're on Harakiri watch again.
Well, yeah.
So Hope Solo, I'm convinced there's at least $10 million that rides on her tomorrow, one way or the other, for personal endorsement money. And same thing with Alex Morgan to a lesser extent. I'm just curious what you guys think of that. Is there any athlete where the money really counts more tomorrow? It's like a $10 million bet.
No, not even the quote-unquote dream team, because it's not like the hoops guys are going to – first of all, it's not like they're in mortal danger and not making the gold anyways, but I don't think there's anything much as I might wish ill upon LeBron or somebody, I don't think there's anything
Never.
That could
no, –
yeah,
you
exactly.
Feel that way.
Not like that could affect anybody there. No, I think there probably is the most money at stake on those ones.
It's great also to see the female athletes get a lot of attention, whether it's the female gymnasts, the field hockey teams, the women's water polo, women's basketball. It's great to see that this may be a turning point in terms of the Olympics, in terms of not the males getting a lot of the attention, but the female athletes from all over.
Your old paper, the New York Post, had a big headline for the Olympics today. Jewish girl wins gold. You got to love it. Allie Raisman, L'chaim.
Oh, there are so many things that could be done with that headline, I suppose. From the perennial thing of every couple of years looking at Olympic TV coverage to another perennial in TV over the decades, why is the CBS morning show in third place? We were talking about that a little bit off air, and that was something where a change has been made again recently in their coverage and the composition of their show. The sole holdover from the reboot at the beginning of the year, Erica Hill, who has gotten to be a little bit of a friend of this show, who we were going to be looking to get on the show. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that won't be happening anytime real soon, as her seat is now being given to Nora O'Donnell, who had been subbing for her actually recently. And one wonders if perhaps that was some type of an audition that was just passed off as being something more innocuous than that. Gail King, in the meantime, I believe, is the only co-host on the show, so they're not having her do that super passive-aggressive, when I join you at 8 o'clock, we'll be talking about such and such thing that she had been doing, which I always thought was kind of a weird intro to give her. So, guys, thoughts on this? Thoughts on CBS perennially looking for the formula to try to get up there with ABC and NBC? We saw NBC with the Today Show exhibiting some signs of fear earlier this summer, casting off Ann Curry in favor of Savannah Guthrie. It'll probably take some time post-Olympics for us to see how much effectiveness there was for that. But
who wants to take this one first?
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to take it because and Simon will at least in his head fact-check me on this.
Okay. Sure.
It seems to me that when they launched this reconfigured morning show last winter with Charlie Rose and Erica Hill and Gail King, that they were kind of unabashed in their dealings with the press and telling us all that they didn't think they would suddenly rise up and take over, you know, first place or even be even or close to GMA or the Today Show. But they hoped to see was certain improvements in the ratings by adopting a style that they would stick to come hell or high water. And this was a sort of basic morning news approach that was reporting news, and then having in-depth interviews with people who were in the news, the newsmakers, and leading that charge was, of course, Charlie Rose, the preeminent PBS interviewer. So maybe they say that because they know that in 6 months people are going to be talking about it on a show like this and saying, like, why in the world isn't the CBS morning show moved at all in the ratings? And they could say, well, we didn't really think we would anyway. Now, here's the problem. I think it's still a dull show. I think, as much as I love Charlie Rose, he's an awfully nice man. I think he's a real snooze in morning TV. I think Gail King has some signs of life in her, but I don't think people go around feeling great amounts of affection for Oprah Winfrey's best friend. And as far as Erica Hill versus Nora O'Donnell, most people don't know one of them from the other one. I mean, sure, we know who she is, and maybe we've even had an opportunity to meet Erica and or Nora at some point, but for the public, you know, it's not exactly earth-shattering that, you know, they're bringing in Nora O'Donnell to replace Erica Hill. It just seems like more of not to belittle everybody, but more of nothing and something that will not really improve matters over there.
Two disclosure points. First, when I was doing commentary on a regular basis on Tech Live, the former Tech TV channel, I worked with Erica Hill. She was one of the anchors on that program. Terrific. And I think she's a super, super talent. I've seen her work on CNN, other places. Terrific person. And secondly, with CBS this morning, a couple things. Actually, the second point is that I don't know what the heck happened. A second disclosure point is that Erica is still with CBS. She has not dropped off that organization. They still talk to her about another role. That said, any show that is coming from weakness, that is in the case of CBS this morning, or CBS's morning news show, third place, it needs to find a rhythm. A show that's fair needs a year or two to find itself. I'm surprised that Erica was bumped off CBS this morning. I thought there were things about CBS morning I liked. The Eye Opener, I think, is a marvelous feature. I'm amazed it gets produced the way it does at the start of every show at 7 o'clock.
It's very
hour.
Good, yeah.
Some of the interviews that Charlie Rose has done has been terrific. Gail's been okay. I think the show was trying to find a rhythm. I think the audience was starting to come through. So the fact that Erica was bumped on short notice really was surprising. And I don't know whether Nora is going to be able... I give her hope that she does, but I'm so surprised that CBS pulled Erica off as fast as she did.
It feels to me like maybe some executive heard from somebody else and said, you know, I mean, maybe the people who are running the show... Chris Licht, is this still the producer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Call me a Morning Joe on MSNBC.
Yeah, yes, maybe he was on board, like you say, with letting this team gel over a year or two. But you know how it is in these organizations. You know, somebody suggests to him in a private conversation, gee, could you shake something up here? We had a shake up at one of the rivals of Today Show. That seemed to weaken its ratings with the newcomer Savannah Guthrie replacing Ann Curry. What can we do? Do we have anyone with maybe a little more pep?
I hadn't thought about this till you mentioned it, Adam. But with Chris Licht having come from Morning Joe, who used to be a panelist on Morning Joe from time to time, Nora O'Donnell. Ooh, conspiracy theory.
Interesting.
Yeah.
She was with NBC a long time. She's Snora O'Donnell for what I care. But you know, we forgot an anchor that's actually in the CBS roster who I think could do great. It could have been the Matt Lauer of that network, and that is Jeff Glor.
And he has been doing some of the substituting for Charlie Rose in the last couple of weeks. I think I've liked him on the CBS Evening News weekend editions, and I think he's terrific.
I have to say, this is my personal disclosure. I know Jeff's wife, Nikki. I mean, this could be the most attractive couple on the face of the planet. I have to say, Nikki's wonderful.
Your endorsement means the world to them, Lloyd.
So it's Snora O'Donnell and Charlie Doze.
Yes, Charlie Doze. Good one, Adam.
What's our Gail King gloss?
You know, actually, she's a non-factor, with all said. I don't think she's. But, you know, it's funny. We had this conversation last night. We were talking about the 1972 presidential election.
Yeah.
And I said there was a candidate, Ed Schmitz, that was a third-party candidate, was running. He got 5 minutes of airtime on the networks in 72. Clearly, he wasn't going to win. But he had a very fundamental idea. He said, you know, tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, you can either vote for Socialist Party A or Socialist Party B, or you could vote for the American choice, Ed Schmitz. Well, you know, CBS should do that. You could either watch Happy Talk A or Happy Talk B, wondering who's going to change anchors when, or you could watch a real news program in the morning. They should, in a sense, embrace the fact that they're different, maybe even a little stodgy, and make fun of the other two networks. I think that it can't hurt to just ignore it and just hope that you're going to find your niche. It's ridiculous.
But what gets you, Lloyd, is like, why did CBS make this call? There was nothing in Erica's performance or delivery on the air that made you think she was in trouble or that she was in the marketplace for being replaced. I didn't get that. And again, the ratings were inching up. It wasn't as if they were going down from when the show premiered in the winter.
And if you're going to replace Erica Hill, what about the lovely Rebecca Jarvis, who's been working on weekends?
Rebecca Jarvis, so we were just fortunate enough to have on the show fairly recently here. She would be a fine person in that role. Again, I'm somebody who's fairly biased when I say that, but it's a thing where when you look at it, I wonder, to answer your question a little bit, Simon, with my own irresponsible conjecture, that she may perhaps have been a scapegoat in the sense of having been a holdover, and that at the very beginning, okay, we're bringing in two other people, and that the retroactive justification is, well, we should have cleaned house completely in January. We tried to do it with her. It didn't work. Whatever. They're going to throw her under the bus. That would be my sense of it.
Yeah. And going to the day program, that's my thinking about Ann Curry. I think she was thrown under the bus. I think it was disgraceful the way that she was handled on and off the air.
Yeah.
Disgraceful about the reporting the week before. Ann deserved better. She was on the Today Show for a decade and a half, not just the year she was the co-host of Matt Lauer, but she was the newsreader and also a terrific reporter for 14 years before that. And she deserved better. What happened that morning where she was basically told that you'll have like a couple minutes to say goodbye and that kind of thing, no tribute, no nothing, disgraceful on everyone's behalf up and down the line to NBC News.
Well, it's so interesting. I mean, I was stunned by that, not that I have anything personal involved, invested in the Today Show, but it just seemed to me that, as you pointed out, she was a member of the, as they always say, the Today Show family. You know, she's somebody that people knew. There was no discernible dislike sweeping the country about Ann Curry. She was just there, and she was very nice. She's a very nice lady, actually. And it just seemed like there again, maybe with what you're same as what you're saying about Erica Hill, is what's the point? You know, maybe Matt Lauer should go. Maybe we're sick of him at this point.
Yes, to throw him in there.
Has anybody thought that maybe the issues with the Today Show over the last year where Good Morning America has caught up is simply because GMA has done a better job in terms of the overall format and than the Today Show? And rather than being, it's just Dan Curry's fault or it's just Matt Lauer's
exactly.
fault.
Exactly, yes, thank you.
You know, as opposed to making one person scapegoat.
Because I see, I compare the shows occasionally, and this is only one sort of stupid, trivial example, but I was watching both shows the morning of the Emmy nominations last month. Because, you know, we were all very attuned to that and wanting to learn about that. And NBC had an interview with, I think there was a magazine editor, possibly the editor of The Hollywood Reporter might have been in their studio or something. And that's all it was. It was very static. It was very plain. Switch over to GMA. And they had, I think, like all the GMA personalities, a couple of journalists. I was not one of them, unfortunately. And they had set up even a set. They had a set that was like a pile of antique televisions, and they kind of had this whole thing. And I thought, this is so typical of the way these shows are doing their business now. ABC puts the work in it. And mm-hmm. it was an attractive segment. You tuned into it and you thought, the Emmy Awards, pile of television sets. This is great. And visually it just worked. And Today's Show was just a bore. It was just terrible.
Yeah, it was a very appealing bunch of people they've got at GMA, very talented crew there. Something that I found interesting, too, I don't know if this is more conspiracy theory on my part, but I don't think it was too long before the Ann Curry change was made that Amy Robach went to GMA. So is it possible she got passed over for that seat? That was one of the things I was thinking about.
It was. That's another dumb move. Amy Robach is one very good reporter, and certainly, I think, was she a Miss Georgia? I mean, she's right up there with Nikki Glor, very, very attractive.
Scoring high in the TV Pulchritude ratings, to be sure. That's my tasteful way of putting it.
What is going on with Mike? I got to talk to Steve and Brian Roberts about this.
We're
passing over the hot anchors here.
I don't understand if that was part of it, too. And then Savannah Guthrie gets the role there, and we'll have to see how that plays out.
Exactly. Well, you know, there again, you know, I guess I'm, you know, I always come at this with this, what if I were just a typical person and I didn't really follow this stuff as a journalist, and even as a journalist, I don't know everything. I'm not an encyclopedia of television. Frankly, I think you are, Simon, a lot more than I am. But to be honest with you, I wasn't that familiar with Savannah Guthrie. You know, how did they come up with her as the person who would, you know, stem the erosion of the audience and build a new one? I mean, she's fine, but there's nothing special about her.
Well, she, Adam, was the NBC News star on the rise. She'd done a lot of good reporting at the White House and the place for NBC News. She had done the Daily Rundown on MSNBC, the 9 o'clock program with Chuck Todd, NBC News' political director. She had done some subbing for NBC Nightly News. She was doing legal analysis for some of the NBC Nightly News stories with Brian Williams. So her star was on the rise.
Anyway, and in the base of that, that's stuff on a resume, and she earns the promotion, I guess, is what you would say.
The thing I thought was hilarious, you talk about TV typecasting. This is not long before she got promoted to the lead role there. There was a story that she was covering. I'm for the sake of argument, we'll say it was the Supreme Court ruling on Obamacare, but she was there. Her billing was NBC News legal correspondent. You know, that was her Chiron thing there as she was reporting that on the Today Show, and they have her wearing glasses. If you're going to be there as a lawyer, you're wearing glasses. She doesn't wear glasses any other times I've ever seen her on the air, but you've got to look studious and discuss the law, and it just, that's just one of those weird TV visuals.
Something. Go ahead, Lloyd.
I would say she was law review at University of Arizona. Let's defend old Savannah on this. Yeah. Maybe her contacts were dry that day, and we don't know if NBC has laser eye surgery as part of their health benefits plan. So,
well, it'd be funny if they were purely decorative, but yeah, it's like let's confer gravitas on her with the spectacles, Lloyd.
But I was wondering how come I hear a lot about female attorneys rising to their TV. Where are the female CPAs? I just want to know that.
Here's something, Lloyd. One of the interesting trends in news over the last year or two have been a number of the business correspondents on CNBC and Bloomberg and Fox Business News becoming generalists. For example, Margaret Brennan is now the State Department correspondent for CBS News and doing very well in that role. Erin Burnett anchoring out front on CNN. And, of course, Rebecca Jarvis, who was not only a former correspondent for CNBC, but she was also one of the contestants on The Apprentice.
Fair enough. I don't know their business school backgrounds there. I mean, but I'd like to see some NBA CPAs. By the way, I'm available if any network execs are listening in.
Well, some of them, the path that Simon's talking about, I think, is a little bit more current. Some have gone the other way, and I go to another friend of our show here, Liz Claman, who actually, and we've talked about this every time she's been on the show, my earliest memories of her in broadcasting were when she was doing the Morning Exchange in Cleveland, Ohio, and had been in more of a general news magazine type era, area, and branched into the financial end of it. So it seems to be more common to go from financial to broadening out, but some have charted another course the other way. Previously on the program, right about the end of the upfronts, with you, Simon, and you, Lloyd, we had talked about the schedules for the fall, the upfronts, everything that had been out there. So we've kind of covered this already with a look ahead here. But for anything for the fall schedule, anything that you three guys think are going to be some of the big developments to look at here in our remaining time in the year 2012.
Well, I'm going to toss this to Simon. It's simply this. You pointed out something, that the East Coast has not been watching the Olympics. Well, that brings the next question. NBC, which has been in the doghouse ratings-wise, is this going to be already that they have already 1 foot in the grave for their fall lineup because nobody's watching it here back east?
Tough to say. It's interesting that I think tonight NBC is doing a sneak preview of the Matthew Perry series Go On, the sitcom, at 11:05. Why would you do that? Even though you may have that big Olympic audience, why are you doing it at 11 o'clock at night? Shouldn't you be doing it at 10? Maybe cut the coverage at 10 o'clock or 10:30 and run it in prime time as opposed to late night?
Because this is what NBC does now. They do the strangest, most bizarre things, and it doesn't work. Just giving Matthew Perry another sitcom was a wrong move in the first place. I mean, the guy, I don't know why TV keeps going back to this guy.
You know, Simon and I, we talked about this. I had the like Matthew Perry. I enjoyed Mr. Sunshine. I'm probably the only person who did. But considering it was a massive flop and you're seeing the same snarky persona here with Go On, why would anybody think that this is going to see where the other show didn't?
And what in the world does the title mean? Go On? What's
going on with your life, going forward with your life despite...
It's a terrible title. It's the kind of title on a show that gets canceled.
Do you think he's going to play a sarcastic wise-ass on the show, Adam?
Absolutely.
Lloyd Carroll? Starring Lloyd Carroll as
himself. We know about
himself.
You, Lloyd, but I meant Matthew Perry. But that's kind of an odd one there as far as the decision. I hadn't even heard about that, to put it on at 11:05. There are some other weird things that are happening with TV and with premiering things. Breaking Bad actually debuting at Comic-Con. From what I know, that didn't hurt the series or the season premiere ratings.
They screened an episode for people at Comic-Con?
Yeah, the day before. Like on a Saturday at Comic-Con, and then Sunday night it was debuting on the air. Have any of you guys ever heard about that? Of any instances of a show, particularly in the online age.
A full episode as opposed to just clips?
Yeah, full episode.
Not for a hit show like that. I've heard it maybe for a show
that
may debut on a network. I think it's been done. By the way, I've been to Comic-Con. Have you guys ever been to
New York?
I've never been.
I've been to one in San Diego once. I would never do it again. I feel sorry for the people that go there. I mean this sincerely. Beautiful place, nice convention center. Mm-hmm. You wait 3 hours to, let's say, watch a panel. To get 3 hours to get in.
Okay.
Well, let's say you're watching the True Blood panel. So you think you can't maybe to meet your heroes. No way. You're going to get Tim Stack to act as MC from Entertainment Weekly to play the know-it-all. Maybe they'll give one or two questions to the audience for probably some ringers there. And then everybody's ushered out. You get absolutely no real, honest interaction. And a lot of the quote name panels. Not all of them, but certainly quote the name, the ones we hear, the glitzy panels. So I feel the public really gets scammed when they go into those
things. It seems to me that screening a show like Breaking Bad would have, I think, clear benefits for AMC. I mean, it's sort of a group of people who will then go and chatter about the show and give it some more buzz right before the premiere. And they may or may not reveal plot points that are important or not. But, you know, it's not a mystery series. It's not like you can really ruin the episode that much by talking about what happened.
And that's the thing, Adam. A lot more of the networks like AMC and FX and USA are showcasing themselves better at Comic-Con than they are at the TCA. I think they see that by getting these fans who are going beyond comic books or comic films and getting into science fiction and mystery and so forth, this is a great way to get the mass audience.
Well, they're an easy and awestruck audience who are not cynical and critical like the press, and I guess that's one reason why that's a much better audience to promote.
And by the way, I went to Comic-Con last year here in New York, and I thought I had a good time. There was some very interesting press panels. There was roundtable format so the press could get in touch with the stars and the producers and so on. I have to say this year, it looks like it's going to take a turn for the worse with the press. The press now has to go through a double approval process. I think they're saying that they want to limit the press this year to allow more fans in. But the Jacob Javits Center can hold everybody. And whoever's organizing the Comic-Con in New York, this is a major mistake.
Well, but you see, that's what I'm talking about. The less press and the more goggle-eyed fans, you know, the better the publicity, because, you know, the goggle-eyed fan goes online and gives their 100% approval rating for everything that they see.
Well, not that I could all cheerleading, but I have one other question. Is there a business side to this? Is Dish Network still giving AMC a hard time?
Yes.
If that's the case, unleash your army of dorks that you have at Comic-Con to sit there and call Dish.
They may do that, Lloyd. AMC is now giving Dish a hard time. They are every chance they get running ads now saying, you know, AMC, not on Dish, you know, ta-ta-da, newspaper ads, etc. Going back to your point about this coming season, Rick, I think this is going to be a very competitive season for a lot of ways. First of all, we are now at a point where programs can get produced all over the place. It is no longer just the broadcast networks. It's no longer the cable networks are now running on year-round schedules premiering. They're no longer just summer. It's fall. It's winter, et cetera. It is now going to be Netflix. It's going to be Amazon. It's going to be Hulu. And because of this new phenomenon of connected TV sets where you can watch the web on the TV, whether it's YouTube, whether it's Netflix with Hulu, you're going to see more original programming show up on your TV set because you can get the web. You can get original interactive apps. You can get, there's more Spanish language networks, Mundo Fox, new Spanish language network premieres in a couple of weeks. It's going to be a more competitive environment than it's ever been. And if you're a producer of a television show, you are in ultimate heaven because you've got so many ways to get a show on the air.
Well, was that a benefit for viewers?
I think so, absolutely.
Why, just because there's more stuff?
Not just more stuff, but more kinds of stuff. There is more kinds of drama. It is no longer just the police procedural, the hospital show, the medical show. You have a Breaking Bad. You have a Homeland. You have a Jane by Design. You have a Switched at Birth on ABC Family. You have Hell on Wheels. You have Westerns. You have hopefully maybe the anthology drama, which I would love to see come back on a regular basis, the hour where every week is a new thing with new cast, new plots, and so forth. Love to see that come back at some point. So you have more variety, you have more types of shows, and now with these YouTube original channels, which are doing all sorts of unique things, and they're getting viewers off the bat in just 9 months without a lot of publicity on YouTube's part, and in many cases without a part of on these networks. But we may be seeing the next generation of television network or video on demand service happen because of YouTube. And again, it's going back to the smart TV, connected TV set. This may end up being one of the big technology developments in the history of television.
I can believe that. And then there was another development that we heard about just recently, actually. A friend of our show that we've had on a couple of different times, Jim Lauterbach, CEO of Revision 3, now with them becoming part of the Discovery Communications media empire. So you're seeing an established media entity with countless cable TV channels partnering up with one of the kings of new media there with some of the great programming that they've had almost exclusively online. So I wonder specifically, Simon, because you're a guy who really, you know, covers that intersection right there with TV and technology. That seems to be a little bit of a roadmap, is it not, of where we're going in terms of the bigger entities now trying to swallow up some of the new media stars?
Yeah, I think that could very well be. At the same time, we're seeing a lot of startups happen. But this was a great move by Discovery to pick up Revision 3. I know Jim Lauterbach very well. I've talked to him many times. I've had him on my show as well. So I want to be televised. And he has run that company very well with a lot of interesting programming. And I could see some of his shows not only online through the connected TV set, but also showing up on Science Channel, Discovery Channel, you know, adaptations of it, expansions of those programs on different Discovery networks.
Simon, I'm in awe of your understanding and grasp of the new era, because I don't have that. And I have a basic question, though. All this programming, it costs something to make it. And I'm an old-fashioned guy. The way you made back your money was, you know, in most of the TV business was you sold advertising time during it, or if you're HBO, you sold subscriptions. Mm-hmm. How does all this get monetized? Okay, you might love all the shows that are on that service you just mentioned, but
Revision 3's got pretty big sponsors. They've got like Ford, and it's unbelievable.
So there are commercials embedded in the shows.
And you always have companies, let's say new restaurant chains, new consumer products. They always want to get into the TV medium. They'll find getting on cable, getting online will be.
Is it almost always younger people in the audience?
Say it again.
Is it almost always younger people in the audience for web-only television?
I think it skews fairly young,
sure.
Is it
yeah.
not? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Although there are some places where you will find a surprising number of mature adults who watch the programming.
Well, okay.
I'm still waiting for variety shows to make a comeback here, guys.
Well, there's no mature adults in here.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny, Lloyd, you mentioned about waiting for variety shows to come back, and I like to think that the FDH Lounge is nothing but the epitome of that in this space or any other.
We are the last of the variety shows.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Pretty much. Yeah, yeah. Nothing is off topic here. I know that as far as topics go, there were a few more things we wanted to hit, but we had talked about Breaking Bad a little bit. This kind of got me to thinking, guys, I got to mention this, having three big TV guys in the room here with me, that I've been jotting down when I was on the plane on the way out here, because if I'm not able to get on my laptop, I'm always jotting something down here, working on ideas for our next FDH Lounge Pantheon that we're going to be doing later this year, voting on the best of the best in different categories. One of the things I thought we would include was best TV show of the new millennium, because you keep hearing all of this talk that we're in kind of a golden age now. You know, we've got Breaking Bad, Mad Men, The Shield, The Wire, all these shows from recent years. Is this a premise that you guys would pretty much hold up, that we are in one of the great eras of TV as far as critical TV making, the cinematic style, if you will, where something plays out as a movie over the course of a couple of seasons, as opposed to that, or is it easy to make too much of that? Lloyd, from your rather skeptical expression, if I'm reading it correctly, you may not agree with that.
Well, you know, it's different times call for different. It's really apples and oranges. I mean, when I was growing up back in the Stone Age, Adam will probably back me up on this. You know, when you have the good old days of three networks, I still remember the power. You know, the powerhouse CBS Saturday Night lineup. With mm-hmm. Saturday Night, people go on. People watch television on Saturday Night. But back then, you had Mary Tyler Moore, you had All in the Family.
Mm-hmm.
I think MASH was even on it. Yes. You know,
Bob,
I mean,
Newhart.
Bob Newhart. You talk about a powerhouse lineup. The Norman Lear sitcoms and all. That, to me, was a golden age. It's kind of been forgotten about. You know, it's, I guess it's an age mm-hmm. thing. So that's why I don't want to, again, I'm not knocking today's program, but I think there's a tendency to forget what we had and to be what was my golden age. But again, it could be because that's when I was growing up.
Okay.
Well, the big difference to me between that era and now is that even the lousy shows in that era, Lloyd, would get how many viewers, Simon? 20 million people?
20, 30, yeah. 40.
More. So that's, to me, the apples to oranges. But in some respects, yes, I understand when people call this a golden age, because there's some very cinematic and lovely television being produced, just on the visual aspects and perhaps the writing, too. Breaking Bad, done on, what, 35-millimeter film in Albuquerque, mm-hmm. and Mad Men with its sort of, like, with its lighting and filming values that it kind of shares with The Sopranos, because it has directors and cinematographers in common and things like that. And you know, these are shows that are for adults and the shows that smart people like and the critics seem to like too. At the same time, however, the golden age is not so golden, because when you're just a casual TV viewer at home in an evening and you're switching around, and you're, for one thing, one of the phenomena that I always find when I'm switching around on my cable system is encountering commercial after commercial after commercial. It's almost like there are long periods where you go right up and down the channels and there's no television on. And what's been missed in this sort of depiction of television as a golden age is that the experience of watching television on commercial networks is become more and more difficult and more troublesome, because commercial breaks are really long and they come more frequently, particularly on some networks that get an awful lot of press, such as MTV. Look, I'm an old guy. I'm in my 50s. I'm not going to be the fan of Jersey Shore or Snooki and JWoww, but the few times I've checked out these shows, basically there's a few minutes of their rather disgusting and grotesque behavior, and then there's maybe 7 minutes of commercials, and all told, these shows are 15 minutes long, and I just think that there's a certain there's a certain flip side to this golden age thing that people are talking about.
I didn't used to remember commercials being that long, but I'll tell you a good example of that. Watching Justified, and I happen to love the theme song for it, and it's one of those things just sticks in your head when you hear it at 30 seconds. I'll play it on YouTube during a commercial break, and they still haven't come back. You're like, wait a minute, that was a 4-minute song, and they're not back from commercial.
Exactly.
That's what kind of illustrates
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You know, I wish we could go back to the days where the commercial break was 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
1 minute.
Yeah.
And then right back to the show. There were no promos. There were closing credits to a TV series that you could read. I mean, I think what's happened lately with these closing credits squished down to the size of a micro.
I mean, what, are they crazy? I mean, show
them at
that point?
I've seen Nickelodeon shows now where the credits run, most of them, under the final scene of a show like iCarly or Figure It Out, and it's an affront to the people doing the show. I don't care whether it's the technical director, the camera people, the actors, the music. But to have them be squished to the point where you got to need a microscope to read the credits is really an affront to everybody producing the show. If you do a full-screen show, you deserve full-screen credits.
Absolutely. I agree with Simon wholeheartedly. It's frustrating even for someone who's a casual viewer to just want to see, hey, that's an actor. I've seen him before. You can't see what part he played. It's frustrating.
But whether you agree or disagree that it is another golden age of television, I do think it is a great age for television performances. I will stack John Hamm's performance on Mad Men, Bryan Cranston on Breaking Bad, the cast of Tremé, led by the brilliant actress Candy Alexander, who, again, is getting robbed of another Emmy nomination, Kelsey Grammer on Boss, Edie Falco on both The Sopranos and Nurse Jackie, James Gandolfini on The Sopranos. It has been, and even before that, Dennis Franz for NYPD Blue, just great characters that grow year after year after year. I think it's one of, in terms of individual performances, and we're not even getting into miniseries and made-for-TV movies, I think the sensational era.
You know what I miss in television? Satire. Mm-hmm. I remember Get Smart was brilliant satire. David Rash, you know, Greg the Cult Show, Sledgehammer, which was one of my all-time favorites.
That was a great show, actually.
That was very good.
I enjoyed it.
You know which I've actually gotten to appreciate is satire? Kind of reminds me of professional wrestling, where people love it on two levels. Either those who want to think it's real or who see the satire of it. I got to be a TMZ fan. I mean, Harvey Levin, it's an absolute spoof of our celebrity-obsessed culture.
Yep.
At first, when I watched it, I didn't quite get it. Who needs to see more B-level celebrities? But I realized it was spoofing Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood, Extra, shows that frankly deserve to be satirized and spoofed. And it took me a while to get that. Nobody talks about TMZ, but I've come to really give it its props.
And speaking of spoofs,
we got Lloyd Carroll coming out of a Kmart.
I got to mention Portlandia on IFC, which is a wonderful satire on suburban life. And speaking of Sledgehammer, Alan Spencer, who created that show when he was in his 20s, he may be the youngest television series creator in the history of broadcast TV, has a new series on IFC that's premiering this month called Bull in the Face. It may be the most controversial sitcom to come out in years. I'm having on my show this later this week. I'm looking forward to that interview. Because
what's it about? Bullet in the face?
It is about, I believe, someone who assumes the identity of a secret agent or a cop who got shot in the face.
I mean, I love IFC, but why they canceled the Onion News Network, which to me was brilliant
Great satire.
That frankly made the Weekend Update at Saturday Night Live look very tame and Mickey Mouse comparison.
That's another thing. You know, television shows today come and go, and you blink and you miss them. I mean, it's just interesting that a show you might have caught once or twice and thought, hey, this is a great show, hope it sticks around.
Mm-hmm.
They might have made 6 episodes, they never renewed it, and it's gone. It's history.
And one show that has to be put up with anybody's best end of any year, The Wire on HBO. One of the great seminal programs in the history of television, not only in front of the camera, behind the scenes, and why it never won an Emmy nomination or why it never won a major Emmy nomination or won a best television series.
Well, that makes you think
ridiculous.
That the Emmys the Emmy people are screwballs or something.
Yeah. Because try this on, Adam. Why are we having the made-for-TV movies and the miniseries being judged under one category and the actors also under the same category? It seems to me the most ridiculous, uncalled-for decision in the history of
because
television.
Because revising the awards must be some sort of crazy process with the people who serve on the committees and the board of governors and all this kind of stuff for the TV Academy because, you know, we all wrote our who got snubbed in the Emmy nominations pieces. Well, the snubbing is a matter of opinion. There's only so many nominations in a category, 5 or 6 or something. The Emmys, even more than motion pictures, I think, need to have more nominees.
I agree.
I think they have to have 7 or 9 or 10 or something.
Just the way the best picture for the Oscars now is. And nobody asked for
there's more
a
TV
combination
shows,
of the made-for-TV movie and miniseries categories. And they are two separate genres.
Yeah.
You act a certain way in a made-for-TV or produce a made-for-TV movie, which is 90 minutes or 2 hours, in a different way than a 4, 8, 12-hour miniseries.
Well, I guess it comes down to fitting it all in the 3-hour telecast or something.
Yeah.
Is that one of the considerations? Let's combine some of this stuff.
And some people have said, well, HBO or some cable network wins all the Emmys in this category, so let's not give them a chance to do this combine the two.
Right.
But it hurts both genres, I think.
Yeah, it would seem like it does, that should be broken out a little bit better. And as we start to bring this around here today, fellas, and we're talking about Emmy-worthy shows, although it was something that I had seen wire to wire and enjoyed greatly, we won't be mentioning it among the Emmy-deserving shows, that, of course, being Entourage. But I go back, as we were talking a little bit before, about the credits being crushed down on the screens there. I go back to Billy Walsh's famous rant that he did at Cannes about show some respect for the below-the-line people. I'm having that rant echoing in my head here as you guys are talking about you know, the credits there, and there's, but the credits are pretty much non-existent. I think you guys are right in that regard.
Credits, some of the credits on shows like Get Smart, for example, or others, were wonderful. You wanted to watch them because they had the theme music, because they had unique ways of doing the credits.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's been kind of lost as they've moved.
Well, I guess we all understand why they've done away with them. It's a matter of, you know, the seamless transition from one show to the other. And if you have credits, as much as you're fascinated by credits, Simon, or I am, or even Lloyd, you know, a lot of people tune out and they start checking the other channels. And I think it was it's a real dilemma if you want to keep people tuned in.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, a network like ESPN, you know, continues to make bank by pretty much just, you know, showing contempt for, you know, what the critics have to say or people who don't like this or that or whatever, because ESPN, you know, as much as they just push the whole Skip Bayless culture, they never end up paying a price for it.
And
so,
by the way, you're seeing that in movies, too. Recently, I saw Chariots of Fire on MSG, one of the great films, maybe one of the best sports movies ever made. And how MSG could be so unconscionable for me to not only shrink the closing credits, but not even to run the Vangelis theme song, the Oscar-winning score, is a crime.
Well, that's because they just don't care. I mean, you know,
probably too cheap to pay for the rights to it.
The military channel has this movie showcase, an officer and a movie. And I swear to you that they're not even showing the movie in the right format. I mean, you know, like it has one of those stretchy, like they don't even know how to push the right button. You know, like most of us at home don't know how to adjust the
TV.
They
got a bootleg version of it.
The people who work in Discovery Channel Networks company don't even know how to put a movie on. It's unbelievable what's going on.
Military, it's one of David Zaslav's Discovery Networks.
Yeah, it's Discovery Networks.
Oh, well, we're going to talk about this. Oprah Winfrey, is she over the hill?
No. In fact, the network is getting better in the ratings. The charter advertisers have renewed. More advertisers are coming in. I think Oprah is going to make it.
Well, here's my take on that, and that is all true and encouraging if you're a fan of the OWN network and like to see it survive, and I have no reason not to. But as far as Oprah herself, I think that when she lost her daytime show, she lost the status that she once had as the titan of media. And I just think she can't get the interviews that she used to have, and every once in a while she'll have something like, you know, the Whitney Houston family or something like that. But these are just people, I think, who say yes because they remember her or believe that Oprah Winfrey still has some sort of juice. But I have a feeling she's not getting the same phone calls returned as she always was. I just don't see how. I mean, that's a very cynical thing to say, but in show business, in the television business, as Heidi Klum might say, you know, one day you're up and one day you're down. But she's not on top anymore.
And Adam, I think that the network did make a mistake of going on when it did in New Year's Day. They should have waited until Oprah was complete with her syndicated series so that she could go to the full time to the channel. But now that she is, things are starting to move. I think Our America with the Lisa Ling program is a terrific documentary series.
It is a great show.
On television. There's the game show Are You Normal America. They've got some interesting shows in the works that are premiering next year. And Welcome to Sweetie Pies is one of the sleeper reality shows of the year.
I think it might come down to, are we tired of Oprah Winfrey or we're not? And I guess, you know, there's a similar question to be asked about Katie Couric. To me, they're kind of the same in that they were such big national TV stars, and yet a lot of people have problems with them. They say things like that are vague criticisms, where they say, you know, that Oprah Winfrey, I'm kind of sick of her. You know, she's always telling me how to live my life. Or Katie Couric, she's too much of a cutie pie, and I don't like that she runs around with younger men, or whatever it is that they say. But they're just not, there is a shelf life to these people. And they enjoy a certain amount of time in the spotlight, and frankly, it's difficult to keep it up until, you know, until they're at an advanced age.
And just as Oprah was setting her plans in motion, and I've seen this commented on as well, and there are, I guess, people out in flyover country that do care about this, Oprah had been fairly apolitical prior to 2008. But directly involving herself in the presidential election as she did, that's a very interesting move on her part. I'm sure she would say completely defensible. I'm sure her fans would say as well. But you're always going to alienate people when you do that. What was Michael Jordan's famous line? Republicans buy tennis shoes also. So her brand kind of went in a different direction just as she was about to make this big move.
That is interesting. Some people have said that. And I can't decide whether that's true.
Well, Joel McLaughlin of the McLaughlin Group would say, Oprah Winfrey, over the hill. Next question for you, Freddie Bones. CW Network, will it survive?
Or as he would also say, you all say yes, I say it's no, so it's no!
I love McLaughlin. CW Network, will it survive?
Well, if it, I hope it does, just so that our buddy Paul McGuire could keep hyping the vitriol on you, Lloyd. That was pretty funny
well,
when he Paul called in the show
upwards.
The one time.
He knows he escaped
That's true.
A sinking ship. No Titanic for Paul here.
No, nothing will ever be better than the time that Steve provoked him into calling the show when you were on there dumping the vitriol on him.
Shedding for the wedding. Yeah. Truly, there's my show of the millennium. Yeah. You guys, hands down.
Yeah. Just as Lloyd was saying that he thought that the president of the network had been moved to tears by the derisive laughter of the auditorium, Paul McGuire calls up and was like, how can you characterize the tonal laughter of 3,000 people as derisive, Lloyd? Perhaps you're more insightful than I am.
Paul's the best. He said it tongue-in-cheek. I like Paul. He must have, I don't know how he kept a straight face when he was talking to you guys.
One of the great moments of entertainment there. Well, among the many great moments that we've had here today, interested to see, do we have any more here towards the end? Anybody got any closing thoughts here as we bring this full cycle, looking at the state of television in 2012?
Simon, is the monkey going to stay in the show?
I and hope we're talking so. About the it's show one of the best things about that.
Talking
NBC
about the veterinary sitcom Animal Practice this fall.
Okay.
In which a monkey stars in the show.
Yeah, well, NBC's had luck there for J. Fred Muggs, and now we have Crystal the Campuchian monkey. By the way, Nick Swisher, the Yankee outfielder's wife, Joanna Garcia, is a co-star on that, so maybe they can deliver some Yankee fans to watch.
Maybe they can.
Well, on the broadcast side of things, I think it's going to be fascinating to see whether everybody holds serve or holds position, or whether NBC or ABC, for that matter, can make a move, as well as, yes, we are finally talking about them, this whole program, the CW. I'm very interested in how elementary the Sherlock Holmes update does with Lucy Liu as the co-star, as well as Vegas, which I think has got a very interesting pairing on CBS with Michael Chilkis and Dennis Quaid. I've seen the promos for it. Maybe the promos are not indicative of what the show is, but I think it'll be an interesting thing to watch. With ABC, look out for Connie Britton and Nashville. I think it's an interesting idea for a show. Connie Britton is a luminous actress. Who knew when we saw her on Spin City opposite Michael J. Fox that she could deliver performance after performance of really great quality, first Friday Night Lights, then American Horror Story, and now Nashville. I think she is going to become a big star with this ABC. And it's also a very rare thing, Lionsgate getting into the broadcast TV business after Mad Men and all the shows they've done for cable. As far as CW goes, Arrow and the remake of Beauty and the Beast could be interesting. But this, I think, is a huge year for CW. It's either get it right or you may be off the air by this time next year.
Ooh.
No matter what they think about online. And I know Mark Pedowitz, who's trying to do the job, like says, you know, we want to aggregate the audience, but ultimately you have to do well on the broadcast ratings. And if they don't do it this year, I think that they will lose the advertisers, they will lose the affiliates, and they'll have to become an online network.
Six figures is what they get for ratings on their shows.
Like, you know, 0-1.
Yeah,
or
I know.
Zero, it's just, almost 0-0. Zero, zero.
I mean, a local station can get more with the Golden Girls, can't they?
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting why the CW affiliates have not spoken. They've not really come out. Or, for example, the My Network affiliates, like Channel 9 here in New York, WWR. Why haven't they said, hey, we could do better in prime time, 5 nights a week, 8 to 10 p.m., with reruns, which are registering zero.
Bring back million-dollar movie of our childhood here.
CW Network draws six-figure. That's it? That's all there?
On many of their shows. Oh. I mean, you look at the ratings of the overnights, and I look at it most of
the
day.
They have a new show, Emily Owens, M.D., that stars Meryl Streep's daughter. I think they should bring in Jack Kevorkian, M.D., and just pull the plug on the network once and for all.
When you arguably have less viewers at any one time than there are perverts on Jenna Jameson's website, it might be time to hang it up, because that's
pretty
bad.
That could be a new show for the CW.
And on Fox, one show I think that will do well is The Mindy Project with Mindy Kaling from The Office.
I like that one.
I think it could be a winner. And Fox has not had a lot of winners in the comedy, not the sitcom, not the animated, the comedy department. New Girl has not been the big success everybody thinks it is. Raising Hope, same thing. Their borderline shows at best. But The Mindy Project, I think, could break out because Mindy Kaling's on the verge of being a major, major star.
She's very talented.
I'm just going to disagree with Simon on Vegas. There have been too many shows called Vegas that causes confusion in the marketplace. Dennis Quaid, none of his movies ever made money. Neither will this TV show. I look for this to be an early cancellation.
Okay, agree, disagree.
My Vegas bet is on Vegas.
Okay.
But point out, by the way, that CBS, this past season, the three top new series audience-wise were all on CBS. Two Broke Girls, which I'm... Unforgettable, which gives CBS credit. They reversed the call. They were going to cancel that show. It looked like TBS, TNT, excuse me, Lifetime, when you pick up the show up, they picked it up, although they shouldn't run it rather next summer.
Absolutely.
They should run it next winter, next spring to keep it going. And also Person of Interest, which has turned out to be a very surprisingly good show.
But nobody talks about.
And nobody talks about. And shot here in New York. But the other thing I want to mention for Fox is Touch. I hope this program makes it. It is great to see Tim Kring, the creator of Heroes, and the people at Fox do a show that is about people being people and aspiring to connect with each other. And we need a show like this. We need a show which is not a police drama, a cop drama on broadcast television, where it's all about people connecting. And I really hope, despite the move to Friday nights, that it's going to make it. I give Fox tremendous credit.
Okay, guys, hate to do this, but I'm getting a hard time cue here. We got to break this off immediately. Lloyd Carroll due over at Citi Field to cover a Mets game tonight. I want to thank three of the very best at covering the media biz, the aforementioned Lloyd Carroll, Simon Applebaum, and Adam Buckman. Thank you all so much for being a part of our great panel today, fellas. Real pleasure.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.